Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Heartbreak Kids podcast, where we explore fundamentally what connects us all in our yoga practice. I believe deep down inside, we all have this amazing connection that brings us to our why we practice yoga. And so in this podcast, that's what we explore. Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids. All right. Hi, guys. This is Taylor Hunt, and I'm here with Courtney Miller from Hamsa Yoga School. What we're trying to do is talk about like the real subjects when it comes to yoga and like the real why of why we come to the top of our mat and practice this. And so I'm here in San Antonio and I'm doing a workshop, and I thought like for my first podcast, I would have Courtney on. She's been a longtime student and someone who I adore, and I want to hear her why. Like, I want to hear why she practiced. But let's first talk about like what made you come to the yoga practice in the first place.
So I actually think that coming to yoga in general was something I like just intuitively did. It wasn't something that like I actively wanted to do. It was just something that felt really familiar. And I was really resistant to it at first. I really hated it. I hated the process. I don't know. It was just like all of the feelings that I had in my body were something that felt really uncomfortable, because at the time that I found it, I was, you know, running or doing the elliptical or doing like different things in the gym that were sort of like the opposite of what yoga is, right? Because it's a lack of body awareness, really. I mean, I guess it's not like that with running always, but for me, it was.
And so when you first started, were you practicing Ashtanga yoga like you do today, or was it a different style?
Yeah, actually, the first teacher that I learned from, the first class I took, I now recognize was Ashtanga. At the time, I had no idea. She was teaching us the sun salutations, and it was in Arizona. And I went to this like little wellness facility with my mom, like right before I left for college. And now I know it was, but I had to do the whole vinyasa thing for a bit before I came back to Ashtanga to recognize what it was.
And so like you mentioned, like what the feelings were, like you hated it.
Yeah.
Which I had similar feelings as well. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering like what were those feelings in the first place? Like where did they come from, or where did they originate from?
Well, I think like the first layer was like my hips, like they just really hurt. So that
from
was,
running or from,
yeah, okay. Yeah, from running. My hips were tight, my hip flexors were tight, but it was also really quiet. And like I was running with loud music, or I was on the elliptical with loud music, and that, like my mind was somewhere else. And so suddenly when I came into this room, and you know, maybe there was like some music playing, but it was just ambiance. Mm-hmm. That stillness and quiet was really, really uncomfortable. Which I think is why I went into the vinyasa world, because they play loud music. So it was like, oh, I can still do this yoga thing with the music and it's going to be,
you'll be
fine. Yeah.
You can essentially avoid like what is coming up. And so, but you had like this opportunity to kind of like deal with these feelings like through the yoga practice. And and so like, did it show up as anger for you, or did it show up as like depression, or, you know, because I've had like a list of, you know, things that have come up on my yoga mat just from like my addiction and all that stuff. And so I'm like, I'm wondering like specifically like what it showed up for you.
A lot of anxiety. I didn't realize like how I was just like a hamster or a gerbil in a little hamster wheel.
That's what you felt like?
I did.
Okay.
All the time. But I liked that, because it was like a hustle and like a pace of life that I could keep up with. It was like I was good at running, and, you know, it was just like this, I could multitask, right? And ignore what was really going on, which was a really high level of anxiety.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And that's, and it sounds like the rat race.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I think everyone, like, to a certain extent, like, has the rat race going on in their lives, especially if you live in, like, you know, the U.S. or whatever.
Totally.
And so, you know, when, like, let's just talk about, like, your first yoga class, you know? So, like, what did that look like? You know, you said, like, she taught you Ashtanga yoga, but how did it make you feel when you got done out of there?
I was really intrigued. And I remember the thing that intrigued me most was she kept referring to her teacher, and I didn't understand like what that actually meant. And then she was talking about the sun salutation and using all these words. And I mean, I think that this is something that a lot of people experience, but it's like, I've heard that before. I don't know what it means, but I've heard that before. And even though I hate what's going on right now, like I need to figure that out. Mm-hmm. I mean, I went like the long way around, but I found it.
What'd you find?
Well, I've made my way back to Ashtanga.
Yeah.
Cause I don't, it just felt really familiar, but,
it felt like you had done it before.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like a common feeling that I think that shows up for many like Ashtangis. Or even just yoga practitioners, like they feel like, you know, it's something that they've like deeply resonates in their soul and it kind of like, it's like, I've been here before. Mm-hmm. I talk a lot about that when I go to Mysore.
Yeah.
You know, I feel that same energy that I've felt before. And so, I'm wondering like, you know, so why do you show up on a daily basis? Like what, you know, like the focus of this podcast is really to, inspire people to practice and mm-hmm. to have a real discussion about like what shows up on your yoga mat and like what keeps people like at the top of their mat and like motivated and interested. And I want to know that from you.
Yeah.
Like, why do you practice? I mean, I feel like a better person, but I want to know why, you know, Courtney feels like, you know, that she needs to show up on a daily, daily basis and practice her ass off.
Well, I liked what you said last night about it being, I mean, I think simply it's transformation, but I think the bigger answer here is that because it was different, it was like a creative outlet almost. And so my ability to actually look myself in the mirror, I could avoid it. And practicing Ashtanga, it's the same. I don't get to think about, you know, what I want to do next. That's already set for me, for us. And so it's an awareness of where my mind is at. And throughout my life with, you know, these different instances where my anxiety has like manifested and, as an eating disorder, I can keep track of where, you know, those thoughts are lingering even today.
And so, your yoga practice has helped you deal with an eating disorder.
Yes.
Okay.
It was challenging at first because my eating disorder was rooted in anxiety and maybe a little bit of obsessive compulsive behavior as well, because it's, I was obsessed with counting things. So it's interesting that I've like found this a healthy outlet for counting things.
Yeah. Only in Sanskrit count.
Yeah. So it's different now. But I had to get worse with Ashtanga before I got better. Mm. You know, like it became, I got too focused on the wrong things in the practice.
The Ashtanga practice.
Right.
Okay.
Before I had a teacher and before I had someone that could really help me understand what it was that I was doing.
Yeah. And what are the wrong things? I'm interested to hear what the wrong things are.
Well, like sometimes I would wear heart rate monitor to like see how many calories I burned. I had one teacher who wanted us to do handstands in between every vinyasa. Oh, and she would be
that's
like,
exciting.
It was intense.
Yeah.
And we were doing it in a hot room, so it was like a vinyasa variation, I guess, of Ashtanga at that point. So
gotcha. And then that becomes also more like a fitness class too,
right,
instead of it actually being like a spiritual practice.
Right.
And so I'm wondering, like today, do you view it as like a spiritual practice?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And what does that mean for you?
Well, I think where my spirituality is at right now is like what you said about being a better person or being more present with the people that I'm around. And I can, if I am emotionally and mentally shut down, which I do really easily because I'm very self-deprecating because of, my issues with my eating disorder, like I'm unavailable to the people that are around me. I mean, I guess that's kind of like humanism, right? Like,
sure.
It's, understanding and appreciating that connection that you have with everyone around you. And so that you know, trusting in something that is like larger, a larger energy than me, that becomes easier when I can sort of wade through all of the bullshit that I have streaming. Am I allowed to cuss?
Yeah. You're allowed to do whatever you want.
all of the mind chatter.
What does the chatter say?
Specifically?
Yeah. I mean, because I think everyone has like a certain pattern of things that it says on a daily basis. I know mine. I'm wondering what yours say. You know, because this is like what keeps people from showing up, or this is why like people don't practice Ashtanga, or, you know, like it's a, you know, so like talking about it, like putting it out there. I'm interested.
No one's ever asked me to say this out loud before. So my mind chatter is, it's always rooted in you're not good enough. And the specific dialogue is like, your stomach is rolling over your pants. Like Ashtangis have flat bellies, or they have like tiny legs, you know, and that's of course because of what I've been through. But then it'll turn into like, oh, like I shouldn't have eaten that last night because now this is disrupting my practice. And so then I have to be like, okay, wait, like this is the point. Like I'm practicing so that I can see this, so that I can change that dialogue. And so then it turns into this moment where it's like, okay, now you have a choice to say like, no, like that was great. You enjoyed that food in that moment. Like now just enjoy this moment. That's not real. But yeah, that's hard to do.
The chatter's not real.
Yeah.
I mean, I started realizing that, you know, because mine's rooted in like, I'm not good enough or you don't belong here kind of line of thinking. And just so you know, like I have a little roll that goes over my, even though I'm like skinny, I have a little roll that goes over and I have like quite big legs. So like, you don't, you know, it tells us lies, you know? And so like, it's good to like talk about it. I mean, at least in my experience, like me sharing about it, helps me connect with other people because I mean, at the end of the day, we're trying to be real. You know, like the dialogue in yoga has like gone away from real. And it's like, you know, and really the dialogue on this podcast is, it's like, how do we take it back to the real so it can be as effective as possible? Right. And this is the stuff people deal with, like regardless of whether it's an eating disorder or whether you just don't believe in yourself or whatever. It shows up for many different people in many different ways, you know?
Yeah.
And so like, how does your practice like really translate in like silencing that, you know, those voices?
Yeah.
Or, I mean, are you just able to deal with them better or like walk me along? Yeah. Like, cause the first thing that you told me was like awareness.
Right.
And so I'm wondering like what the rest of the dialogue is to like get you, if you're in a funk and you're practicing, like what does it take to get you out of the funk of like your head?
Well, I mean, I guess I need to back up a little bit here and say that, like the first big step forward that Ashtanga helped me make was understanding that for so long, and most of our, you know, people in the Western world or in the world really have a misunderstanding of what an eating disorder is.
Tell us. How long have you been dealing with it?
Since I was 14.
Okay.
So 14 years, almost 14 years. And I learned what an eating disorder was when I was 23 and I was working for an eating disorder dietitian and recognized that actually a lot of her patients that were coming in to get help were people who had actually developed their eating disorder while in inpatient care for drug and alcohol addiction. So their addiction shifted over to eating disorder. And so then understanding the pathology of that started to be really intriguing to me because up to that point I have just thought like, oh, it's just this thing about like wanting to look better in my clothes, right? Like I thought it was this vanity thing. And so there was shame that was that came along with that because that just seems really ridiculous to be spending almost every waking hour of the day thinking about all of this stuff because I want to appear a certain way to other people. So the practice helped me understand that actually the root cause of what I was dealing with wasn't vanity. It wasn't something I needed to be ashamed about. It was anxiety, which was, you know, rooted in something else.
Right.
And like I mentioned before, like maybe a little bit of OCD. I haven't been diagnosed as that, but I wouldn't be surprised if.
I mean, I think that anyone who deals with a little bit of like addiction or eating disorder, like there's a certain like OCD quality that goes along with them. Not that they're on the spectrum or whatever for it.
But, right.
I mean, I think it's definitely there.
Yeah, definitely.
It sounded like when you first started that these feelings were like totally present. Yeah. You've been dealing with the eating disorder for a while, but like, I mean, how does that translate into like you being better? You know, like what's the correlation between like your effort to like how you feel?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think first it was surrounding myself with people or meeting people who were doing the same thing and acknowledging that like, this happens for everyone, or Ashtangis, people who are practicing this type of yoga.
What happens for everyone?
Well, that like something, like scary things surface. Like there might be anger, or it might be resentment, or it might be fear. Like these really intense emotions will surface. It's not something that just goes away. Like you're not, like I'm never not going to be in recovery from my eating disorder, right? Like that, I will spend the rest of my life like in recovery from this thought process. That is something, that is my journey here on earth in this lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, that's similar in the, you know, an addiction to alcohol and drugs and stuff. And so, you know, so on a daily basis, you show up at the top of your mat. I mean, those feelings still come up?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But your awareness around them and how like they come out, they're changed as a result of practicing.
Well, I think that what it has done, it has allowed me to choose new behaviors, right? Because before it was, I could restrict or I could go for a run afterwards, and again, like I always knew how many calories I had consumed. And always knew how many I needed to burn that day so that I could, you know, look how the way I wanted to look. And practicing Ashtanga has allowed me to choose new behavior, or given me the strength to choose new behaviors.
And so I'm wondering, like, when you were counting calories too, like, you know, and you were doing what you just said, like, I consume this many and, I need to look this way.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever look the way that you wanted to look?
No. No, so no, of course it was never enough. Never. Yeah. Like even when I looked really, really sick, I needed to look sicker. And then, going to group therapy didn't work for me because I wanted to be the sickest person in the room.
Hmm.
So I couldn't do that. And I even went to see, you know, therapist and that, none of that worked for me for some reason. Really Ashtanga, like when I really dedicated myself to the practice, was like very quickly I started to figure out how to heal that, or to start healing that.
And so do your parents are your parents like have they acknowledged like the yoga in your life?
Yeah, definitely.
What do they say?
Well, I think that being totally honest with them about my eating disorder and like how that affects me today is really hard to talk about with them because, you know, they see me as like I'm their like science experiment, right? They're like really proud of their science experiment, and coming to them to say like, here's how I'm like fucked up is hard to do.
And so like you haven't been honest with them?
Oh, no. I have definitely been honest about it with them, but I don't think it's been something that I've talked with my family about enough.
And so what makes Ashtanga like the thing that is the most effective in Courtney's life? I mean, because you basically just told us that none of the therapy, group sessions, therapists, any of that stuff like helped. So like, I'm interested in knowing why Ashtanga yoga worked and none of the other stuff worked.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the biggest piece for me was I was never going to be the person that, like, sat still and just, like, tried to meditate, right? Like, that, like, the movement of it was something that really drew me to the practice. Like, I mean, maybe I was drawn to it for the wrong reasons, but I stayed because there was something that – unlocked when I started to move through the practice. And then when I started to internalize it, and it wasn't, I didn't have to use a cheat sheet anymore. I didn't have to like listen to somebody call out the poses. Like I knew it, it was inside of me. Then it took on this whole new life form. And like this ability to pay attention to the nuance and to actually understand what people say when they're like, let's get back to the basics, was a crazy experience for me because I was constantly trying to be better, to be more, do more. And like, why would I go back to like, you know, learning how to do downward facing dog? I know how to do that. Like I want to do handstand.
Right. This is common thought.
Right. So, yeah.
For everyone.
So having to actually understand like where my pelvis was in space or like what my calves are doing and to be in a place where I was actually in awe of my physical body and not like hating it was or is like the greatest gift.
Yeah. And that's what the practice is giving you?
Absolutely.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a testament to the practice to say the least and also your hard work.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not only practice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's not only the practice. Excuse me, I'll clear the language up. It's more like you showing up and doing the practice. That's so cool. And so I'm wondering what you unlocked. You used the words unlocked, like it unlocked something for you. What did it unlock?
I think I, like you, at a young age, recognized that I was able to sense, like, the connection that we all have with the people around us. It's not like something everyone can access, that ability to feel what others around you are feeling. And it was really scary for me because I couldn't discern like what was mine, what was yours. And I think this sounds like so cheesy, but I'm going to say it anyway, but I think I actually like unlocked my own heart, you know, like I spend so much time like looking at other people and thinking like, I want what they have. I want to look like that. I want to have that. I want to be that. I want to sound like that. I want to make jokes like you do. And then this practice has just like given me the ability to just to want what I have.
Yeah. So awesome.
Most of the time. It's still a work in progress.
It is always a work in progress. I mean, but if the intention is to be better than you are the next day and like to really own your true self or whatever you want to call it, it's pretty awesome that it shows up like that.
So. Well, yeah, and I think that is what is so beautiful about this practice is that it's not, like it's not ours, right? It's something like really sacred and so many of us are having like this really similar experience, but also really different experience by just moving our body and like concentrating.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting when you come from vinyasa first, when it's like, I spent like hours making these sequences. And like when I was teaching, it was all about like remembering what was coming next or what was the cool transition that was coming next. And now it's like the total opposite. Like you're paying attention to the person in front of you or paying attention to yourself.
Yeah. And we need more of that.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we need more presence with the people around us, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, with our students and family and, you know, our loved ones and stuff. And so let's talk a little bit about your experience in Mysore, because you just got back from Mysore like a month ago, or maybe a little over a month.
Yeah.
And I'm interested in how that took your practice to like a deeper level.
Yeah. Well, so my first week in the shala was really, really hard because all of the stuff that I thought I had already dealt with was like, it was a raw wound. And I was so surprised that it was that intense. But again, when I was there, I felt, and you said, I think you might have said this earlier, but it's like, I felt this energy before. And so, like, fear of showing up and not being afraid of what I was going to experience in that room was really interesting. Because once I surrendered to that, then, like, it was crazy. Because, like, this hip flexor thing that I've got going on, like, my back is always hurting. It did not hurt at all while I was there.
Because you think that being in the space, like, or the energy that was in the room, like, was able to help you, like, shed a layer or something?
Yeah, well, I think I was allowing myself to be more vulnerable. And I wasn't overthinking things. Like, I was, like, just really trusting what was going on. And I was trying to be so present. Or I was being so present with my practice because it was like, I'm here. Like, I traveled, like, 24 hours to be here to work with Sharat. And, you know, at this point I figured out how to say, like, okay, mind chatter, you need to set over here and, like, let's, like, move forward in this lane. But then I came home and it's like, okay, now I have to figure out how I do that when I'm in the room by myself.
Yeah.
With that same intensity.
Have you been successful with that?
I've had days where I have been, but I mean, I wouldn't say that I haven't been successful, because my practice after being in Mysore, I'm, like, more committed now and more in love with, like, what this practice has to offer. So in that way, like, I think that I have been successful, but, you know, practicing in a room by yourself, the energy isn't there. It's not that intensity that you have in the shala in Mysore is really special.
Yeah, it is.
It's
special.
Really special.
And so I'm wondering how, like, you know, like, the first time in Mysore, like, how did you perceive Sharat, like, initial thoughts of you interacting with
him? Yeah. Well, I thought that, I mean, of course I was, like, really intimidated. I was really intimidated by the whole thing. And so to see how, like, actually funny and gentle he is was actually really emotional, because I had gone into this, like, prepared to be around, like, aggression, mm-hmm. because I was, like, thinking about the worst possible scenario to mentally prepare myself. And then not just from Sharat, I mean, like, the whole experience being aggressive and intense, and then, like, meeting him and seeing how gentle and kind he is was beautiful.
Yeah, like, the difference between, like, what people say about him compared to, like, how he actually is like, you know, night and day.
Well, yeah, you can tell, like, he does not want us to take ourselves or this practice too seriously.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is, I mean, of course it's serious because it's serious work that we're doing.
Hard work
that we're doing, but it's not, like, you don't have to be an asshole.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I do know. I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a lot of times we confuse the things, like, with the seriousness and, like, the hard part of the practice with, like, a rigid personality.
Right.
Yeah, and then it's really nice to have, like, the top person, you know, the person who's, like, guarding the lineage or watching over the lineage, to be, like, fun and joking and playful and, like, telling us not to take ourselves so serious. Like, I always think, like, you know, he's got to think, like, these Westerners, you know, are crazy,
yeah.
you know, because there's an intensity around the practice, which is, you know, palatable,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like, and then you add the Western part of, you know, you had someone from the United States and all of a sudden everyone wants to be, like, number one, it becomes competitive or something. It's crazy. So, like, having, you know, the Indian guru saying, like, you know, we need to tone it down a bit,
right.
you know, like, focus on the real priorities.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and I think it was the first conference I was in when he, I mean, he was really talking about, like, what commitment meant, and he said that it's not about the posture that you're on. Like, that doesn't make you an advanced practitioner. And he said, you know, there are people that have been coming for years and they're just doing half primary, and those are the real yogis. And to hear that come out of his mouth was just like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
we look at the fancy yoga postures and say, like, oh, that person is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, like, look how amazing it is that they can put their leg behind their whatever, you know. But to hear that stuff coming from him is, like, quite special.
Right. Right. Well, and I think, too, it was like, okay, so then I got to realize, like, I push myself. The ways that I'm still continuing to push and to allow that dialogue to affect my behavior. And it's like, you are allowed, or it felt like he gave me permission to be gentle with myself in the spaces that I need to be.
Yeah. Or human.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because like some of the people that I, are attracted to Ashtanga, we treat ourselves more like robots instead of, like actual humans, makes us unrelatable instead of actually, like being able to connect with yourself and other people. Mm-hmm. So what was your biggest takeaway from Mysore?
Mm. Well, I think that being there and experiencing, like, there is not an age range or a body type or a country that you can isolate that's dominating that experience. You know, it's like really the biggest melting pot I've ever been a part of.
India, you mean?
No, but at the Shala.
Oh, at the Shala.
Being at the Shala.
Okay.
And that, in some way, like, helped me believe in myself. So I came back feeling more self-assured than I did before I left. More settled in who I am.
Awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I'm obviously in San Antonio right now. Mm-hmm. I'm getting to spend some time with you. And you have this, like, new venture that you got going on. And so Hamsa Yoga School. And so I'm wondering, like, what you have going on with that and, like, what your vision is for it and what you're trying to do, like, in San Antonio with this yoga school. Like, are you trying to take a little bit of what you learned from Mysore and, like, bring it into San Antonio?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that coming back, it was, like, more clear, like, this is, like, really important to me. Yeah, you said this while I was in Mysore, like, Mysore programs happen, like, in every city, and we haven't had the opportunity to have something that's, like, really provided space for our Ashtanga community to gather in downtown San Antonio. Like, we're all practicing at home, those of us that live in this part of the city, and, being able to experience not only the community that exists in Mysore, but then, like, being able to experience your community in Columbus, like, that, I realize, like, that's something that I really want here in San Antonio, not just for me, but for the extended Ashtanga and yoga community. It's something that's really missing, and I hope that next time you come back, we have an established Mysore program.
Awesome. Well, it's not going to be hope that gets it to you. It'll be hard work that gets it to you.
Yeah.
And I know that you know how to do that. What kind of, like, you're going to be offering a Mysore program?
Yeah.
Awesome. And so what's the schedule? What are you trying to do with, like, the classes that you teach? Is it all Ashtanga or is there other?
Well, so my business partner, Debbie, will be teaching the Hatha classes. But what I'm teaching is just going to be strictly Ashtanga, and it will be Monday to Friday, starting just these first couple months. And we'll do lead on Mondays and then Mysore Tuesday to Friday. And then starting in May, we're adding the Saturday lead as well.
Oh, cool.
So it'll be a full program.
And so what do you think your biggest strength as a teacher is? I know that you just told us, like, about, like, I don't know, some pretty hard stuff, like coming forward with, like, some serious truths. Do you think that, like, informs your teaching or do you think your Mysore experience informs your teaching the most? What helps you?
I actually think the thing that makes me the best teacher is also the thing that I have to work on, because it is where my shortcoming is as well. I'm really empathetic. Understanding what the person in front of me needs from me, and filling that role of, like, teacher, that's going to be a big task. Or just, I think that it's scary shoes to fill, especially when, you've worked with, when I work with you. I mean, it feels like this whole new layer of, like, self-worth that I have to renegotiate with myself. Yeah, I'm an empathetic teacher, but I've also been teaching for a while, so understanding, like, body mechanics and brain chemistry, I think, is, what I studied in school. So there's this other layer of information that I have to offer. it's not so much about like shooting off into the stars and the cosmos, you know, it's more about like staying grounded and focused on the tools that we have right in front of us. Yeah. Is what interests me the most.
Many of us don't actually recognize what we're capable of. And so finding a teacher who can be a voice of reason, even if it's just, you know, one day a week, it's better than nothing. There were so many places, because I have spent so long practicing at home by myself, so many places I was holding myself back and not actually believing that I would ever be capable of something. Like Supta Kramasana, I had given up. I was like, that pose will never happen for me. It will never happen.
Now it happens daily.
And now it happens daily. And so, yeah, having that experience with someone, like showing you what you're capable of and then, you know, recognizing that big thing is accountability. The teacher-student relationship is something that's really sacred. And I heard that a lot. But once you get to experience what that actually means, or what that feels like, you can't turn around from there, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's quite an intimate experience mm-hmm. to like, you know, especially like in the Mysore setting, mm-hmm. to be deeply seen mm-hmm. on many different levels, you know, like to see the patterns of behavior and like have like someone watch them and to know that you're being watched and you know that you're being held accountable. And like the teacher knows that whether or not you've been doing your practice or whatever mm-hmm. it is, you know, to like be deeply seen is something that is very intimidating for
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
You know, but there's also like this sacredness that mm-hmm. goes along with it.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, you know, nowadays, like we think that we should do everything alone.
Right.
You know, or be number one.
Right.
And so that means in spite of you,
right.
I'm going to be number
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, number two, like means that I'm going to beat number two,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And that's like not a teacher-student relationship. Mm-hmm. I mean, like the teachers that I know don't act like that. And
mm-hmm.
but our like society makes us think
right.
like that, you
yeah.
know? Like, I don't need any help. I got this under control.
Yeah.
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 Where, like, it's really telling us the opposite.
Yeah.
Even, like, in my recovery, it's like, you need to get a sponsor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, what? Who is this sponsor? You know? Like, what
yeah.
is going on? I
yeah.
got to talk to him?
Yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah.
and in the yoga room, it's like, I got to be deeply seen.
Yeah.
You know? Like, whoa.
Yeah.
Which some people I don't think are ready for it.
Yeah.
But there's also, like, man, there's so much power in it.
Yeah.
It's so awesome.
Yeah.
Because when someone can really give you feedback and look you like dead in the eyes and like tell you the truth, when everyone else in like your life basically tells you what you want to hear, is a powerful thing to have.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know?
And I think, you know, something that everyone wants is they just want to be seen and they want to be felt and they want to be heard. And that is what the teacher-student relationship is.
Yeah.
It's all of that, which can be really scary at first, but, like, that's where the growth is, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's crazy. When I was here in San Antonio, this is my second time to San Antonio, and, like, the first time, I remember, like, you walking in, and I remember, like, the dialogue that we had together, and, like, I remember, like, you were super excited for me to be there. And, like, we didn't know each other at all. And, like, to think that we spent time in Mysore and you know, obviously I'm back here and I'm visiting your studio. And, like, you know, you come to Columbus and stuff like that to practice with us. It's pretty amazing. But, like, I can tell you that from the first time that I saw you, like, I knew that you were one of, like, my people. Not that you were definitely going to be, like, one of my students,
mm-hmm.
but, like, I could tell that, you know, the practice provided something for you that was like very, very deep, sort of like the experience that I have with
mm-hmm.
the practice, where it's not so much about the physical part. It's more about like me believing and caring about myself
mm-hmm.
Because I lacked that so much.
Yeah.
And I could feel it immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really cool that like that resonated into like really the relationship that we have today.
Yeah.
And it's pretty amazing
yeah.
to, you know, you're like family.
Yeah. It's nice to hear you say that because it was really intense last year when you came because you weren't the first authorized or certified teacher that I had worked with, but like you were the first person that I
like believed, or there was something, there was just something that I just wanted to learn more from you. And now it's like, it's interesting how it happens now, because it's like, there's just all of these different moments where I know I get to see. I always have a moment where I know I'm going to see you next, which is really cool.
Or it's even really cool, like when I send a text message and you're like, oh my God, did you know I was thinking about you? Which happened just the other day or whatever. Like, were your ears burning? Which I feel like happens like with students when you get like deeply connected, and especially like, you know, you've been through a lot of the same things as what I've been through, like I feel like there's a deep connection. That's what's powerful about the teacher-student relationship too. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show, and like, thank you so much for like sharing all of the details and like all of the hard stuff. I mean, that stuff is, it's not easy to share, you know, but like, that's what makes you real. And that's what like makes you attract people like who are struggling. And it's really like a breath of fresh air. Like, I'm honored that I get to teach you and that you would call me your teacher. That is pretty awesome. And so, you know, if you're in San Antonio, show up at the Hamsa Yoga School and practice with Courtney and Debbie and get to know their community. It's pretty awesome. So, thanks so much for being on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.